My name is Ted Burns, and I'm Senior Director of Political Affairs and RADPAT for the American College of Radiology Association, and I want to welcome you to our Radvocacy podcast hosted by RADPAT. Our goal with the podcast is to give you a behind-the-scenes look into the various advocacy efforts of the college, our members, and insights from political influencers here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, this is Ted Burns with another episode of our Radvocacy podcast. And today, I'm super excited and honored to have as our guest, Dr. Priscilla Slanet from the Board of Chancellors. Dr. Slanet, before we get going into kind of the meat and potatoes of this podcast, we usually start by asking our guests just to kind of walk us through their background, you know, briefly kind of where they're from and then where they went for their med school and training and their subspecialty and just where they're practicing now. If you want to start us off with that, that would be fantastic.
Sure. Well, thank you, Ted, for having me here today. So I grew up actually on Long Island outside of New York City. And my dad was a general surgeon as well as a primary care provider in a small community. And my mother actually gave up her college teaching career to raise a family. And after high school, I ended up going to Smith College in Western Massachusetts, where I played on the field hockey team, majored in mathematics, just because majoring in science would not have really been possible being on a traveling, you know, field hockey team. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up going to Harvard Medical School in the Division of Health Sciences and Technology. And that's where I kind of really started diving into research. And during medical school, I also decided to get a master's in public health. Now, I did that for a couple reasons. One, I'm always a bigger picture type of person. So I kind of wanted to get a bigger picture for the healthcare system and how everything fits in. But I also honestly finished my third year and had no idea what I wanted to do with my life or career. So I needed an extra year to figure out that process. And it was really actually the people I met in public health school that really helped me realize that radiology was actually the field that I should be pursuing. So I was really lucky I got into residency at Mass General Hospital. So I stayed in Boston. And that residency had a lot of flexibility that really allowed me to explore areas outside of just clinical training. And so that's why I got involved in organized medicine. Back then, I was really more active in the Massachusetts Medical Society. And what you'll find is really interesting, my first bill that I managed to get into the state legislature and pass was actually on rollerblading safety. It was really a lot of fun because a whole bunch of radiologists ended up actually getting to film a public service announcement. We were all skating around on rollerblades, promoting, you know, the use of helmets and elbow pads and knee pads and wrist guards. And it was really, really cool. And then through the Medical Society, I also served as a national representative to the AMA Council on Scientific Affairs and sort of really got involved in, you know, that side of organized medicine. And then ended up as well during my residency doing the Rutherford Levante Fellowship, which we can talk about a little bit later. But after residency, I did a fellowship in breast imaging, stayed at Mass General for that, and then actually joined the staff at Mass General for about 5 years before I'd been moving around among the different institutions in the Boston area. And I'm presently at Boston Medical Center, which is the largest safety net hospital in New England, but I'm soon actually going to be moving up to Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center in Hanover or in Lebanon, New Hampshire.
That's great. So it's an interesting background. This is kind of one of the best parts, honestly, of the podcast that we do is because I kind of feel like I know some of our guests a little bit, but then going through at least that first part, kind of just hearing their story and their backgrounds, kind of just a really cool way to get to know them a little bit better. I mean, the funny thing is you mentioned the field hockey. My daughter played field hockey and I watched her all 4 years in high school play and I have no clue how the game still works, even though I went to every single game. And then the roller skating thing, it's just so hilarious. And first of all, I really hope there's got to be videos of that somewhere that we can figure out how to archive.
There are videos. I mean, I recently spoke actually at a women's governing council event for the Massachusetts Medical Society, and they had a brochure from whatever year that was with me in my rollerblading helmet.
That's amazing. That's so funny.
I believe the video is somewhere. I should probably try to dig it up at some point. But I mean, it featured not just me. I mean, we had Robert Novelin, a very well-known emergency radiologist, did it, multiple other radiologists, as well as, you know, internists. I think even the president of the Medical Society participated. And it was quite entertaining because we actually did film in a real studio. And it was a public service announcement that aired for a couple of years in the Boston area. So,
well, I got to tell you, I think I have my new Rad Pack solicitation idea. It's for $1,000 contribution. People can access the video and watch it or something like that. Okay, so we'll move on or else I'll get in trouble with all these other ideas with that video. So you had mentioned the Rutherford Fellowship, the Rutherford Levante Fellowship. And at the time, it was the Rutherford Fellowship. Many people may not have known that you did that. And many people probably also don't really realize that you are one of the original Rutherford Fellows. I've been with the college for 22 years now. Obviously, we've been doing it well past the 22 years that I've been there. But it's been cool over the many years of me being at the college, getting to meet a lot of these younger folks who are interested in advocacy, and then seeing how they, I think more often than not, kind of stick with it. Now, they may do other types of advocacy. You know, maybe they get into economics or they do something within the AMA or whatever the case may be. But I do feel like a lot of the folks who come through that Rutherford program take some of that exposure and experience and that they've learned and then utilize it somehow in their volunteer, you know, leadership opportunities. So I kind of want to talk to you about this because, like I said, I've been with the college for 22 years. So you did this before I came on. I would have remembered if you were doing it when I was there. But, you know, things were probably very different and probably also very similar when you went through as far as the political climate. I know every year we're like, well, it can't be crazier than last year. And then it becomes crazier than last year as far as just the political environment and the climate. Walk us through, if you can remember, kind of around the year range or politically what was kind of going on at the time, and then just kind of your experience, what made you interested in doing it. Were you with Dr. Duzak at the time, or was he? I know he also did it.
No, we were actually, I guess, we were both awarded the fellowship that same year. Not there at the same time, though. I think, you know, the ACR thought it was probably better for us to be there individually so we could actually spend our time with the lobbyists.
Yep.
I mean, I honestly don't recall what was going on politically back then. I mean, I'm sure we were advocating for reimbursement.
Probably
and,
the same,
you know,
thing.
Coverage for, you know, the same issues, basically. Right. I mean, there weren't any scope of practice issues that I'm aware of, but it was really a lot about reimbursement. But I thought, you know, for me, you know, spending the time with the lobbyist was probably the most memorable because, you know, before 9/11, you know, all of us had the opportunity or ability to ride this train that was that goes underneath the different buildings.
Yeah. Yeah.
It connects the House to the Senate. And, you know, so, and what was fascinating to me, and I still remember this, is most of the lobbying, the true lobbying, went on those train rides.
100%.
And it was really cool. You'd be sitting next to these senators or congressmen and, you know, the lobbyists would be telling them about, you know, trying to educate them about a certain bill or a certain issue. And it was really a really amazing, like, opportunity to see how you really have to build support for whatever your issue is sort of behind the scenes. You know, the actual hearing. Okay. So I went to some of those hearings. I mean, they were interesting and people testified, but honestly, what I've noticed is probably most of the people up there have already made their decision. They're allowing people to say things, but they've already gathered all of the information in most cases that they would need to inform their ultimate decision. So, you know, there's a lot of preparation, I guess, that has to go on prior to those actual formal hearings that take place. You know, I think the other thing that was really memorable is just getting to sort of know some of the ACR staff back then. You know, really, you know, building those relationships. And, you know, one of the people that I still am very fond, you know, think fondly of is Otha Linton.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you ever overlapped with Otha, but really, really incredible guy. That's all I can say. Yeah. And it was really, you know, funny because years later when he, I think eventually, I believe he retired from the ACR, but he started writing the history of various radiology departments. So the funny part about that is like Otha would come to several of the Boston hospitals that I was at, and we just seemed to overlap. And it was great catching up with him. But the funniest part for me is that he made sure that my name was in these books for these different institutions, which really, I don't think I made such huge contributions to some of those departments, but he made sure that I was listed there and had some mention in the text, which was really quite comical from my perspective, since clearly there were probably other faculty that had been there much longer who had probably made more significant contributions.
But I will say this. So it's kind of like, I don't know, an analogy off the cuff would be, like, you're not supposed to have favorites. So, like, I used to coach my kids' different sports teams. And, like, you know, my wife's like, you have favorites. I'm like, yeah, I have favorites. The ones that play the way I like, they're my favorites. The ones who are a pain in my butt, they're not my favorites or whatever. And, you know, when we're doing our job at the ACR, obviously, we try our best to represent kind of the, you know, the whole spectrum. We have 30,000 plus, you know, members. We've got academics, we've got private practice, we have hybrid, independent, we've got, you know, we've got PE. I mean, there's so many different moving parts and dynamics of how people are practicing. And we do our best to kind of represent everyone. But I will tell you that, you know, when you have someone in DC for a week and you're kind of trying to show them the ropes, and you build a connection, you build a relationship with some of them. And when you do, they're kind of like your favorites. And then you're like, hey, I need someone on my Rad Pack board. Hey, I'm going to reach out to one of my favorite Rutherfords and see if I can recruit them and stuff like that. And I assume that was probably the reason why you had that experience in DC. You obviously connected with, you know, some pretty important folks. And then they were like, oh yeah, Dr. Slanda, she's my favorite. I'm just going to put her in every place that I can reference her. Are you talking about that blue book? That it was like this infamous blue book of like the history of the ACR and all that stuff?
No, I don't know if I mean, I don't even know about that one. No, there was a history of Mass General Hospital, a history of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. So I think I'm in both of those, which I...
Okay, that's
funny. And certainly, you know, it's not that I haven't made any contributions. It's just, I felt like there was certainly maybe some favoritism going on, but it was just, he was such a wonderful person. And he had done so much for the American College of Radiology as well. And just, you know, really, you know, a terrific individual.
Yeah, I never had the fortune of overlapping, but I had heard so many stories. It, like, from like the first day, I remember going through kind of like orientation and history about the college, you know, like prominently featured and discussed and referenced all the time. Very well respected. So I had referenced kind of like the meat and potatoes of the podcast. So this is where you come in as the guest, because I don't know, was it a year ago we started talking? How long ago was this when we first started talking about this advocacy curriculum thing?
Probably about a year ago. Yeah.
And so when we were just getting ready to start recording, I mentioned this to you, so I'm just going to mention it to you again. When you kind of reached out to us about this idea, I thought this is super cool and super crazy at the same time. I said, I don't know if she knows what she's getting into, but this could be really awesome or this could be something else. And so I was very cautiously optimistic and I thought it was just very quaint time. Look, we can put a spotlight on advocacy and the value of advocacy. I'm not going to turn that down. I think that's really important, but it's been interesting. I want you to really kind of get into the nuances of all this, but like, when I think of advocacy, I think of like political advocacy because that's what I do. I do political stuff, but advocacy has such a broad meaning, can apply to so many different things. And it doesn't always just have to be political or just policy. Like there's so many other areas where there are advocacy component. And so I've kind of rambled on long enough about this, but you know, this is kind of your baby now, as chair of the Commission on Publications and Lifelong Learning, in your capacity on the Board of Chancellors. Just kind of walk us through like your initial interest and vision for this, and then also kind of over the last year, the various iterations and steps and kind of now where we're going. a lot's happened in a year with this, and it's been really cool and exciting to watch. But I want to stop talking and give you the forum to kind of educate our listeners on this. Really good stuff.
Yeah, no, so what was interesting is, so I came into this role as commission chair for this Publications and Lifelong Learning Group, which really oversees the, well, most of the educational portfolio for the college. And, you know, the first thing for me is I had to actually spend some time learning about what programming exists in the ACR, because there's so many different programs out there. You know, also noticed that some of the education also falls under different commissions, but I was actually a little bit surprised. I mean, we have a great education center, the CPI program, case in point, radiology teaches, the bulletin, AIRP, mm-hmm. I mean, many, many more programs. But what I really noticed is that, you know, the American College of Radiology is really known for its economic kind of advocacy efforts. It's known also for accreditation and quality and safety, but it was just fascinating to me in terms of advocacy. There was no curriculum, and all of us as volunteers for the college are really trying to do advocacy, but we're just kind of learning those skills by chance, like through different experiences and sort of, you know, learning from maybe interactions that were less than optimal. And instead, you know, as an organization, I really thought that there should be a formal way to learn and develop the skills in order to be really effective when we potentially go to a legislator and try to advocate for a certain, you know, bill that might be under consideration. Or honestly, I mean, you can advocate for your own career in your own job, or you might be advocating even for patients so they can get access to indicated imaging. I really thought it was actually very, very important that we figure out how can we help our members become more effective in advocacy. You know, the healthcare system is evolving so quickly that we really, really need to be ready to speak on behalf of our patients as well as the profession. So what I wanted to do is build this advocacy program. And I really thought about, you know, I'm an educator by a lot of my past, you know, work, really thought about, okay, what are the skills that we need to become good at advocacy? Because yes, I could come to you, Ted, and you can teach me all the things you know and help me, you know, say the right things in front of a legislator. But the reality is, you know, there's more than just, you know, one sort of interaction. And as I said, advocacy is quite broad. So I came up with this idea that there were really five pillars. There's leadership skills that we all need to have. We need to have communication skills. And that's communication that's all verbal, written, nonverbal. I mean, so many forms of different communication. We need to know how to interact with media and as well as social media. We need to have some skills in how to brand ourselves as well as our practices. And then we really do have that health policy side or the legislative side that we need to sort of help people develop the skills, you know what the steps are, how to develop a fact sheet, how to give their elevator speeches. And then, you know, subsequently, as we started evolving, we started thinking about, you know, why don't we also have a sixth pillar that helps people navigate the annual meeting? Because I can tell you, it took me many years to even understand the annual meeting. And certainly new counselors coming in are very confused. But I would say even our very seasoned counselors, sometimes there's abbreviations thrown around and everybody's trying to figure out, what is this guy talking about, right? I'm like, and you know, we could have some fun sitting next to your colleague who's also confused and make up, you know, what we think it stands for. But the reality is that I think, you know, our members really would like to have some guidance on how to be better in the realm of advocacy. So when I brought it up to the commission, you know, my feeling was, you know, first of all, it was very well received by my staff. They were excited. But I mean, I realized that this was actually a curriculum that was going to cross multiple commissions. It's going to probably involve multiple members. And, you know, and I thought it would be a really good opportunity to bring people together, because I'm a big believer that, you know, in this world, we create these silos, and these silos are artificial and they really are not helpful, because advocacy really crosses so many different dimensions. And so what's been really, really wonderful is we held our meetings early on. I know you were at part of those early meetings. And certainly, I don't think you were the only one who was a little hesitant. Like, what are we trying to do here?
I mean, I liked it. I was just like, this is a lot of stuff. But
I know, but you weren't the only one who was like, and I think together, though, we really figured out how to move forward. Like, yeah. I mean, we had this vision, right? And I think we morphed the vision. It's certainly become more formed. We now have pillar leaders, you know. So, I mean, our first goal was just to create a few videos, short sort of micro lessons. And we got those prepared for the annual meeting last spring. What was helpful doing that is that it sort of gave us an idea of what could we do or how, what should our format be. And we also were able to get some feedback from members who had actually watched the videos. Yeah. To tell us, is this helpful or is it not helpful? And from there, though, I mean, it really became clear that we needed to have leaders for each of the different pillars. We needed to brainstorm sort of the topics. And then we really needed to work together to really make this happen. And one of the great things is obviously that Raina Kiefer, who's one of the ACR staff, has really been kind of the point staff person for this.
Yeah, she's great.
I think she's really enjoying it, to be honest. I mean, I'm sure it's been a ton of work for her. But she's been doing amazing work in terms of editing videos that people are making, coordinating, you know, and helping people write the scripts, making sure the scripts are approved by the correct people, which has sometimes included you, Ted, because, you know, if it's a legislative topic, we want to be sure that the content is appropriate, that it's helpful, it's useful. And it's been really, really wonderful because we put calls out for volunteers and we have volunteers coming from all aspects, I would say, of the college. We've been able to engage people in the Radiology Leadership Institute. So they're really helping a lot with the leadership components, as well as probably some in communication and even probably legislative areas. We've got RADPAC and the Radiology Advocacy Network people involved. I'm trying to think. We also just have general members involved and people from across many of the different commissions that are part of the Board of Chancellors. So, and we're still welcoming more volunteers. So if there's anybody listening who really wants to get involved, I would say email myself, email Raina Kiefer at the ACR.
Yeah.
You know, we welcome people to get involved and engaged. It's not that much work putting together one of these little micro lessons. I did one recently with Dr. Karang Patel. I mean, I did an introductory video for the actual curriculum. And it was actually, I was a little nervous about doing it myself. I mean, you know, you'd say, okay, you know, I've done a lot of things, but hadn't really done a lot of videos. But it was actually a really great exercise. And it was actually really easy. We created a script. We actually recorded the script. And then Raina actually did a really fantastic job putting, you know, it into a sort of a PowerPoint with some different pictures that sort of drew upon some of the content that we had covered. You know, it's been a really great experience, and I think all the volunteers are really, really enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, you touch on so many elements here that it's been really, really cool to watch it grow and mature. I think to your point about the silos, that is a very real situation where we kind of just get in our little tunnels and we get focused and we kind of, you know, don't realize, or maybe we don't want to admit that there's a lot of overlap and crossover. So it, you know, internally, quite honestly, from a staff perspective, it's been also great too, because people are now reaching out to me where maybe otherwise they wouldn't and say, hey, can you give us just another set of eyes on this? Or, you know, I may refer someone to a different staff member and say, hey, you need to really talk to Raina because she's doing X, Y, Z with the editing. But it's really kind of forced us internally to kind of communicate probably a little bit more than we otherwise would, which is always a good thing. But, you know, I'm just looking at the website. So the website is www, and we'll put this on the podcast too, but www.acr.org/education-and-cne/advocacy-curriculum. So it's under the education and CME section of the website. But if you just look at some of the videos, I love the format too. It's not just a whole bunch of words and white papers and just, you know, I'm not a reading type of guy anyway. So I'm more visual. I think a lot of our members obviously prefer to, you know, consume information visually like videos and pictures and stuff. So, you know, these are really very easily digestible videos, but it's like, what is advocacy? Why does it matter? How to speak to a legislator, how to give an elevator pitch. You mentioned that effective caucusing when you're at, you know, the ACR meeting. Acronyms and abbreviations. I mean, that is a huge deal because that's in all different parts of advocacy within the college. How to grow chapter membership. I mean, that is a very real issue where a lot of chapters could probably benefit from watching that short video about different tips and hacks on how to kind of make sure you can sustain, you know, a membership in your state. And then building a career in radiology leadership. These are some of the videos that have already been done, but you know, you got the full range of people. You have a lot of YPS and RFS contributors, and then you've got people like Dr. Duzak, who's been around and, you know, has a pretty well respected career in doing a lot of leadership types of workshops. So this is a really, really impressive thing that you've built from just kind of a concept to actually application. So kudos to you. I really wanted to do this podcast really as recognition for what you've done, and also to make sure that we get as many folks as we can to be aware of these resources. And also, to your point, hopefully encourage and incentivize them to bring their expertise if they have something that they can contribute to our efforts as well. This is fantastic. We will make sure that we have this included in our podcast description with all the links and everything. But I'm knowing some of the things that are still in the work, I think there's a lot of really good content still to come. And that's also very exciting. And I think also, you know, to your point, you know, with the video, it's like it may be a little intimidating for folks. It's maybe the first time doing it, or they don't like to be on camera or whatever the case may be, but it's a really good growth opportunity for them just to kind of put themselves out there out of their comfort zone. And I think they all kind of like the end product, you know? I mean, you get Raina to edit the videos and make them look kind of cool and fancy. And people are like, wow, that's kind of neat. I'm part of that. So it's a really, really fun thing to watch develop. And again, I'm kudos to you. It's awesome. I can't hype it up enough.
Well, so, Ted, I would say it's kudos to the whole team because
I mean, there's a lot of people.
Anybody can have a vision or a concept, and without a team of people that are willing to jump on board and make it happen. I think it's, you know, the whole group of people that have been engaged and involved, and you know, we are definitely still growing the curriculum. We're nowhere near done. The nice thing I would also mention is these videos are very short. The goal was to make none of them longer than 4 minutes, but optimally 2 to 3 minutes. So if they're very doable, like in between other activities, even maybe when you're reading, you know, take a 2 or 4 minute break at the workstation and watch one of them. And we do plan to eventually package the whole thing potentially as a certificate program with CME.
Yeah.
Right now there's no CME just because we're still in the process of building the curriculum. And then we are going to create a smaller package, I would say, for residency programs, as well as probably for medical students. Because I think, you know, although, you know, I'd say practicing radiologists probably have more bandwidth just because, you know, residents are very busy trying to learn clinical radiology, but to at least expose all residents to advocacy and help them develop these skills, whether they get involved with the American College of Radiology, these are skills that are really lifelong. They're really going to help people succeed in their own personal careers or, you know, whatever, you know, even in their personal life. And they certainly will help you when you get out in practice. So, you know, whether you decide to get involved in the American College of Radiology or maybe you get involved in your state, you know, state medical society, it really doesn't matter. These are very, very important skills and getting exposure to them is important.
And I think especially making it available to them so early in their career, so it becomes kind of part of the culture that they've just been around and are familiar with and understand. I mean, really, like if you look at the anesthesiologists for years, they've been kind of the gold standard in DC, whether, you know, they have a very big pack, much bigger than any of the other physician group packs, or just from an advocacy perspective. But they've really ingrained in the residency programs kind of, this is the culture, this is how we operate. Advocacy is part of doing business. And they've really kind of made that just as common as anything that would be taught clinically in a residency program. And so I think having these resources, making them available to these folks as they first, you know, kind of get into to an interest in radiology, and that's all they've known. You know, so you think about it. So for instance, RadPak. RadPak's 26 years old. Okay, so there's people who have certainly been practicing radiology prior to the start of RadPak, right? So they, you know, it took them, you know, 3, 4, 10 years, however long for them to be like, oh, I didn't really realize RadPak existed. Now, you know, all these people for the last 15, 20 years, RadPak's been there. Whether they've contributed or not, or whatever the case may be, like, they know it's a thing, and that's all that they've kind of known. It's not like it just is a new thing. So I think similarly, all these types of resources are so huge for them. So I want to be respectful of your time, and I want to make sure that we get down to the last part, which is also another really fun part of the podcast of getting to know our guests a little bit, for both me and for the listeners, is kind of our lightning round questions. So this is geared towards kind of quick response, knee-jerk type thoughts. Sometimes I may jump in if something kind of catches my attention. And oftentimes I will say with our guests, there's always kind of like a very big surprise answer, no pressure. But there's times I've been completely floored by some of the responses I never would have guessed in a million years. So let's get started. Favorite food.
So this is a tough one because I love food, but I have three, probably hot chocolate, lobster, and ice cream.
Okay. All right. So I got to tell you, I don't know what's
not
going on.
Not in any
on,
order,
but,
really.
But I got to tell you, ice cream, if we were to go back and look historically at these podcast episodes we've done, I think ice cream's probably got like a 90% mention for favorite food. It's like the easiest go-to. For some reason, everyone writes that out.
It's hilarious.
It is. Favorite place to travel?
So anywhere where there's amazing wildlife, but I'd say probably of those three, Sanibel Island, the Galapagos Islands, and the Swiss Alps.
So the Galapagos is funny because I'm from Philadelphia and huge sports fan. And the Philadelphia Phillies mascot is the Fanatic. And the big thing they have at Fanatic is he's from the Galapagos Islands. And so they have like books about it. And I'm like, this isn't a real place. And I'm like, oh, it's actually a real place.
Oh, it's quite a fascinating place to visit.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Totally worth going.
I'll have to check that out. Now, favorite hobby and activity. Now, I always have to preface this. This does not, you can't just be like, the Ivy curriculum I'm doing with the ACR. It can't be anything like that. It's just like more your own recreational things that you like to do outside of all the other
volunteer
stuff.
Okay, well, that's perfect. That's what I was thinking about that. And I said, walking on the beach, collecting shells, and doing bird watching.
Awesome. Very cool. Nice. Last thing, favorite saying, favorite quote. You know, so this does not have to be, you know, something that's like from a philosopher or from a historical figure, or it certainly can be, but just it could be something you use every day, you know, with family members or friends or whatever the case may be. But what do you find yourself saying or liking as far as a saying or quote?
So I focused on the quote, and actually I really like this quote from Walt Disney.
Okay.
So here we go. The quote is, all our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. And I think the reason I really love it is that I think we really all should not be afraid of going outside our comfort zone. We need to be willing to take those risks. We need to learn from our setbacks. And we really always should be pursuing what makes you happy. So if you have the dreams, you should be following those dreams and have the courage to go after them. So
love
that's
it.
I think that's probably how I've lived my life as well as my career. So I had a dream of creating an advocacy curriculum, and I somehow managed to get you and many others to follow along, and we're on the journey together, which has really been a lot of fun.
No, that's awesome. Really appreciate your time joining us and talking about all the success that we've already seen so far with that advocacy curriculum and knowing that there's so much more to come is very exciting. And so kudos again to you, to the team that you've helped assemble and everyone involved, and really looking forward to more to come. So thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time and energy and everything that you do for the college.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And hopefully people now will have some interest in checking this advocacy curriculum out, and it's going to keep growing. You know, I'm just glad that everybody's so engaged, and hopefully down the road, it will really help the college become even more effective in all of its efforts.
That's awesome. Well, have a good one. Take care.
All right. You too.